Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 185. It's the week of October 26, 2013. I'm recording the show live from Ashland, Virginia, Center of the Universe, Central Virginia. And thanks for coming along. This is this episode is going to be about race reports. I've got some pretty cool race reports that got sent to me, so I'm going to share some of those with you. And what I'll probably do, in lieu of just summarizing them, I'm going to I'll read them, and because they came from some regular listeners that I want to share with everybody, especially some race reports from Ryan, who shared a few with me from Canada. And so if there's any other Canadian listeners up there, please send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com. That's ashlanddave@gmail.com. And let me know you're out there. What I'm going to also do as I get closer to episode 190, I'm going to go ahead and start the Stand Up and Be Counted campaign again. And I did that back, I think it was either the 150 episode mark or the 100 episode mark. I can't really remember. And what I did was I just asked people who listened to the show to send me an email and tell me where they're from and what they do. And that way I kind of get an idea of the people that listen to the show. The show gets about between 600 and 700 downloads a week or an episode. And I probably, the last time I did the Stand Up and Be Counted campaign, I think I heard from about 100, I think 100 people. And so I might start doing that again. So you might hear me talking about that if you come back and listen to future episodes. If you're a new listener, I appreciate you coming along and checking out the show. This might not be the best episode to judge the podcast on. I would recommend going back several episodes and listen to some others. But I hope you do come back. And if you're a regular listener, I certainly appreciate you coming back and downloading the show again. So I've got some race reports. I got a few from Snuggy Bear, John Snuggs, who's in my virtual running group. Used to be a physical running group. Now it seems to be more of a virtual running group. And then I got some from Ryan, and I'll have to check the email bag and see what else I got down in there, stuff down at the bottom, or some stuff's been sitting for a couple weeks. And sorry about that. Sometimes it's just hard to get to the podcast emails in a timely manner, but I think everybody probably understands how busy everything can be and how we're bombarded with so much information constantly. I'm no different than anybody else. So let's get into some of the race reports. Depending on how many I can get to, may have to do a second episode with just the regular topics that I'm going to hit on. So this might be another kind of a double shot type of podcast situation where I do a race reports episode and then I do a regular episode. All right, this one's from Ryan. Ryan is a regular listener to the show, former member or current member of Team Incognito. He's kind of virtual again. Got the email from him. Dave, enjoyed your recent Busted podcast. Nice work doing what you do. Here's a few race reports. I'll keep them brief. I'm going to share a couple from him. One was called Melissa's Road Race, and this was late September in Banff, B-A-N-F-F, Banff, I guess how you pronounce it. If you don't know where Banff is, I guess I'm pronouncing it right. That is it's near Calgary, Canada, I guess Alberta, and that's north of Montana. So that's the western part of Canada. He said registration filled within 48 hours back in March, so a couple buddies and I almost forgot about it until the summer when we realized we should start training. He signed up for the 22K, though they also had a 10K. He says, I know 22K is a weird distance. They should just make it a half. So let's see, if a 10K is 6.2, so that's 12.4 plus 2K, which is, that is kind of a weird, so that's over 13 miles. Anyway, Ryan says, fall came quickly in Alberta, so it was in the 40s the whole race. The toughest part, though, was the elevation at about 4,500 feet, which is higher than anything in pretty much anything in Virginia that I've ever been on. I was in pretty good shape aerobically, never felt any pain, but my legs just couldn't turn over like I wanted them to. I'm convinced the reduced oxygen had something to do with it. The course was beautiful, though, running next to the award-winning Banff Springs Golf Course, doing a 5K loop twice, then returning along the golf course back towards town. During my second 5K loop, which is around 9K, he got passed by the race leader and eventual winner, who was at 14 kilometers already. Ryan finished in 1 hour, 57 minutes, which he was pleased with. I grabbed a great brunch with my buddies and Bant before heading back to Calgary. So that's pretty cool. That's called Melissa's Road Race. He included the link on that. It's www.melissasroadrace.ca. And also, what I'll do is, if I'm able to do it, I'll put all these links in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. I mean, Ryan went to the trouble of putting them in there, so I'll just copy those. Another race report by Ryan is the River Park Cross Country Race, which was October 5th in Calgary. He said his last non-road race was the James River 8-miler back in 2010. And when he says the James River 8-miler, that's here in the Richmond, Virginia area. Ryan used to live down this way. But it was a cheap, fun thing to do while his family was out of town. This was the first in a cross-country series that Calgary Roadrunners puts on. 10 races October through March, which several end up being in the snow. They're usually Saturdays at noon, with the main distance being 8K, also a 4K fun run. They're only $10 for non-club members. I guess that's $10 Canadian, which includes the race and a soup social afterwards. Anyway, River Park start finish was next to the Elbow River, which we actually had to cross twice. It was about calf deep. Past years have reportedly been waist deep. That could definitely get cold. About 50 meters wide, significant current, pretty damn cold. So you're talking about 50 meters wide, which is more than 50 yards. That is a pretty wide river, and the footing has to be kind of treacherous. Anyway, he said he really couldn't run on the crossing as you had to watch your footing. Didn't want to splash more than necessary. Besides, the river there were two giant hills, so throughout I never really caught my breath, even though I wasn't going that fast. The course ended up only being about 7.1 kilometers, which was plenty, but a bit deceiving, as I could have pushed harder at the end if I knew it was coming. I finished in about 41 minutes, which is probably middle to back of the pack. Of course, they had vintage race timing, where in the finish chute, they hand you a popsicle stick with your placing, which you hand to the results people who write it next to your name. Definitely cool to do something different than pounding the pavement. And that is on the Calgary Roadrunners. The link is at the CalgaryRoadrunners.com website, which I will again put that in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. Ryan, good race report. Let me comment on the popsicle stick. Because I was going to put this in a different podcast, but I'll just kind of mention it now, and I'll go into it some more. A couple weeks ago, Ashland Tom and I worked the finish line at a multi-high school cross-country event, and they used some defective race bibs. It was just terrible, and we could have really used these popsicle sticks at the end. And, yeah, that's vintage, but, you know, not so long ago, that was the way it worked before chips and all the sophisticated equipment. And so that's pretty cool that people still do that. I'm sure Tom will like to hear that, because when he was younger and he ran races, you know, back because he's so old, you know, he would run these vintage races. So I guess he'll feel good to know that he's kind of vintage. And also, Ryan's going to report on the Banff Ekiden Relay, which he's doing as a corporate team in 2 weeks. And this email was October 6th, though, so that's the weekend of October 20th. So that was last weekend, and I look forward to getting that report from him, and we'll pass that on. So anyway, Ryan, thanks for the email. Really do appreciate that. And it's always good to get the race reports. I really do like sharing those, and I'm going to share another one here. This is from Snuggy Bear, and this is the Atlantic City Marathon race report, which was on October 13th. So if you've ever thought about running the Atlantic City, New Jersey Marathon, this might be, you might want to check out this race report. This is from Snuggy Bear. It says, Dave, met up with the five maniacs in the corral, lost them for about a quarter mile, then started talking with one of the maniacs, a guy named Marlon, who's from Ohio. We had a similar pace and good conversation, so we kept talking for most of the race. Along the way, I saw Scott Barco, maniac number 5182, who also knew Marlon, so the three of us talked for a bit. Scott's wife, Sandy, race marathon maniac 4436, was also running but having trouble with their plantar fasciitis. Scott was also having trouble with his knee. They both had these injuries at Cove Island, Connecticut, back in August, which I'm guessing maybe John hooked up with these people then, so I wasn't really surprised. We left Scott around mile 4 The course winds through neighborhoods away from the beach before getting onto the boardwalk just before mile 8. One part of the course heads through a tunnel that is about a quarter mile long. As we entered, I was less than thrilled to hear other runners doing their best to start the echo chamber. I assume these people were either excited to consume their first beer at the finish line or half marathoners or both. Just before we got on the boardwalk, I saw a banner for a bar that caught my eye on this Sunday morning, a surfside bar called Worship. I mentioned that it would be totally legitimate to tell my wife that I was leaving for Worship. Nice. The best part of the race for me was that my family came out. We saw Barbara, Brian, and Eric, and my mother-in-law, Dorothy, near 8.5 mile mark. It was really quick, but it means so much. I was very psyched. The boardwalk must range from about 20 feet wide to probably more than 60 feet in places. It's not closed to others during the marathon, but generally pedestrians stayed clear. For about 1.5 miles, the runners are heading in both directions. For my pace, we had half marathoners coming at us, and we were each on our own right-hand side. As we were running along, a guy hawked a nice loogie that dropped right in front of Marlon and me. Did I mention this race was in Jersey? The course leaves the boardwalk near mile 14 before it actually ends. That's unfortunate because the boardwalk was nice. Closer to the high-rise hotels, the boardwalk is behind dunes and is protected from the wind, but also protected from the view of the water. We ran for a bit with a very beautiful view of the waves, so I was so sorry that it ended. We made a loop of about 9 miles before coming back for the final 3.5 on the boardwalk in the other direction. My cousin lives about 30 minutes to the east in Egg Harbor, so I shouldn't have been surprised to see his wife Tish, my cousin-in-law, I guess. But I was shocked. So surprised that I didn't even recognize her voice saying, "Hey, why are you walking?" And that was a good question since it was not quite mile 17. That actually was great timing as I felt like I needed to perk up because I would be back through that section again just after mile 20. Somewhere in this stretch, Marlon and I were talking about our usual pace for a marathon. I really thought he was holding back to run with me, so I told him he could leave me at any time, but I also really appreciated the company. We walked through most water stops, and it seemed like when one of us wanted to walk a bit further, the other running was enough motivation. We started talking with a group of people who were trying to estimate their finish time. We all agreed that marathon math is a special challenge. I actually enjoyed it. It helps keep my mind occupied. Others said they find it frustrating because you frequently get different answers when you recalculate. I try to explain that by the time another mile is covered, it isn't that a good thing. I don't think they bought it. I think what he's trying to say here is I try to explain that by the time they recalculate, another mile is covered. Isn't that good? But he didn't think these people understood him. When we got back to see Tish, I said hi first, and it really picked me up to see her again. We ran an uneventful couple of miles back to the boardwalk. Then we had to climb that ramp. What seemed like a short, slight incline on the way down now forced us to walk instead of run. That's what happens at mile 22.5. The last 3 miles on the boardwalk was good. I felt a burst of determination and some quick marathon math left me thinking we could get to the finish under 4:45, and that became my goal. The wind was blowing pretty hard and constant, so it was nice to feel cooler, but frustrating that my pace didn't match the effort. Marlon's younger daughter ran with us for the last quarter mile through the finish line. I missed that 4:40 target by about 20 seconds, but I'm very happy. The medal is very cool. It has the Atlantic City Lighthouse, which with a light that actually lights up, and it's also a bottle opener. They have truly captured the Atlantic City beach experience. That is the Atlantic City Marathon. John's finishing time, 4 hours, 45 minutes, 20 seconds. Excellent report, John. A couple comments. I'm guessing that these are some of the folks that you knew from probably doing some other marathons. And just for the other listeners out there, John always hooks up with marathon maniacs at races and takes advantage of the friendships and whatnot. I'm still kind of shy about that, but John is definitely not. He has just kind of made that marathon maniacs club. He's just taken advantage of all the networking and the contacts and that. And I guess I really should because, I guess if people are marathoners, multiple marathons, especially maniacs, they're probably honest people and not some kind of weird perverts that are going to, steal your wallet or something if they, if you get up to go to the bathroom at a restaurant and you leave your wallet or some of your belongings on the table, they're probably not going to steal them. Although I would never leave my wallet sitting on the table. But anyway, John, excellent race report. Really do appreciate that. That was the Atlantic City Marathon race report from October 13th. And we'll go back to August. John has got another report that he submitted that I want to share. This is the Cove Island, Connecticut race report from August 24th. And it's a little bit of a lengthy marathon. But the good thing about this one is that this is the one where I actually lent a timing clock for this race. This is the one that I think was, if I'm not mistaken, almost canceled. So let's get into this race report. I haven't even read it yet. I've just glanced over it. And so the email says, Dave, this took way, way longer than I planned. Sorry for that. He said, anyway, I think his little paragraph before the race report tells me that maybe I should have edited. But we're gonna do it raw. Here we go. Pre-race. This is Cove Island, Connecticut Marathon. Pre-race. When I hear about a race that friends are doing, naturally I am interested. In June, my friend Diane, who runs a lot, told me about this race in Connecticut. My friends Rob Manolo and John King were also interested. John King is another member of Team Incognito, and he smoked me on his first 50-miler when we were down in the Florida Keys, but I don't think he's a listener to the podcast, so I don't mind saying that, but he did well in his first 50-miler. So why not add this to my to-do list? It helped that this would be a new state for me in my slow quest to join the 50 States Club. John and I worked out plans to carpool and split a hotel room. We planned to drive up during the day on Friday, spend the night, run, then drive home on Saturday. I checked in with Diane 2 days before, and I was surprised when she asked if I had a GPS watch. She wanted it to measure the course. In the 2 months since I had seen her, she had run a 500K race over 10 days and become the race director for this Connecticut Marathon. I'm not sure which one was harder for me to believe. Diane was talked into the race director role, and she had no idea of if any of the race preparations had been done. I thought of Dave and John King. He might be able to help. Dave loaned us a full-size race clock. That's me. That's who he's referring to. By the time we were heading up 95 on Friday morning for the planned several-hour trip, Diane had learned that bibs and medals were coming from North Carolina with another runner. So we arrived in Connecticut at about 5:30 p.m. This was Friday before the race. Talked briefly to Diane. The park at Cove Island was not ideal. Parking costs $20 for non-residents, and we couldn't buy passes until Saturday at 10 a.m. The marathon was capped at 50 runners, so it was small. But for groups larger than 20, are required to have an event permit. Without an event permit, we decided to not use the clock that they provided. It's a great piece of equipment. Definitely screams event in progress. Definitely agree with you on that, John. And for everybody else listening out there, if you're listening to this race report, if you haven't figured out by now that this is a FUBAR, or known a what is it called when you have a situation that's pretty much all effed up? That's what this is what it sounds like. $20 just to park? That's ridiculous. Anyway, so race day. We arrived at 5:35 a.m. The first group had already started but had only completed one of the required 30 laps for the marathon. We started 11 minutes and one lap behind. Many people started later than us because the published start time was 6:30 a.m. and Diane allowed people to start at various times. The original volunteers had dropped out with the original race director, so on Friday night, three runners chose not to run but volunteer, counting laps for us as we passed. The volunteers kept track as we each called out our number when we passed. We chose not to wear bibs because we were worried about the police citing us for not having an event permit. Ah, very good. That's very clever. Everyone I told about the short course, many loops, thought it sounded crazy, but it really was pretty fun. The park is heavily used by runners, walkers, and dog walkers. Our group of 36 runners didn't stand out dramatically, but it wasn't too hard to spot each other. Whenever you felt bored or lonely, you could just match pace with someone and socialize. After about 30 minutes, the sun rose over the Long Island Sound and was stunning. I love having the opportunity to see all those colors. Just after the four-hour mark, the parking pass guy arrived. So I ran over, bought a pass, put it on the van, and ran back on the course. Total time lost about 5 minutes. It was a relief not to have to worry about getting a parking ticket for $60. By about 11 a.m., Rob had finished and was currently the fastest time. I was running, talking with Diane as we rounded the corner and headed for the check-in area. We saw the police car. We were both pretty worried, but then I saw Rob talking to the officer. I figured if anyone could make things work out, Rob would be our guy. After a long discussion, the officer asked us to move our checkpoint as it was in the way of a tram that takes people in bags closer to the beach. We decided to be more subtle with our event, referring it to it as a bunch of runners celebrating a birthday with a bib and finishers medal as party favors. All the runners, especially finishers, were asked to be very discreet. Unfortunately, not everyone complied. Australia's marathon man was part of the event. I first noticed him near the 3-hour mark, I was running, walking with another runner when a guy wearing a mostly blue outfit with a red M on the chest passed by. The other runner said, "Way to go, Superman," and the response was, "I am Marathon Man." At the time, I thought that was kind of goofy, but not much more. The other runner told me Marathon Man was attempting to break Larry Macon's Guinness record of 150 marathons in a year. After he finished a few minutes before me, Marathon Man decided he would take his party favors over to get a photo with the police officer. At this point, the officer was much more interested in whether we had an event permit, and I thought Marathon Man was more was just goofy. He was more blank than goofy. I wrapped up my post-race stretching quickly so we could get out of the park. Marathon Man kept running his mouth as he headed for the airport, as he had another race in Canada the next day. That's pretty funny. Rob was able to finish in less than 4 hours and won the marathon. John King and I finished closer to 5 hours, with me bringing up the rear. The parking and event thing was stressful. Marathon Man is a blank bag, but everyone else was awesome. Rob, John, and I got cleaned up and then began our drive home. A mostly uneventful trip put me back in my own bed in Virginia before 10 p.m. with the clock returned to Dave. I'm grateful for my friends and their willingness to jump right in and make this event possible. That's the Cove Island Marathon, 5 hours, 7 minutes, 13 seconds. A couple of comments on that. John, thanks for sharing that report, and hopefully the listeners out there enjoyed hearing that. I just want to comment on a few things. Seems to me that was pretty much that thing was almost doomed from the start. I remember you told me that the guy had backed out. Let me just give you a little piece of advice for listeners or for anybody that has a stupid outfit on and wants to go get a picture with a police officer. That's usually a pretty stupid thing to do because officers don't really want to have their pictures taken, and especially with media these days. So that's, you know, that's always an idiot thing to do. And it sounds like this Marathon Man was a total, jerk off, I guess is a good way to put it. But it's, I'm guessing, John, the way you made it sound, I think the results were published for this, I'm guessing. So I'm hoping you're able to count it towards if you're trying to move up in the Maniacs. I would count this as a marathon. And I guess the whole event, you know, there's nothing like running, you know, going out there, you spend all this money and gas, go up, and then, you know, an event's not happening. That's just a shame. But then at the same time, sometimes these smaller events can make for a lot more fun, and people that you meet are a lot different than you do that you would in big events. So that's the Cove Island, Connecticut Marathon. John, thanks for that report. I'd be very curious to know if that would be held next year. I'm just not really sure. Let's check into some of the other emails here in the email bag section of the show. All right, we heard from Richard Fallis. Not sure how to pronounce that. I can't remember, Richard. Sorry about that. Richard works for the State Department. He used to live in Turkey, and now he's in Northern Virginia. And he had sent me an email back in late September to see. They looked like they were going to have a person drop out of their D.C. Ragnar Relay, and they have an ultra team, and they were looking for somebody that was anyway, they were able to get somebody, and I really appreciate you, Richard, you checking in. And what I was wondering is, what I was hoping is to hear how you did on that relay. But he's back in Northern Virginia for the next few years, and he had a chance to do some pretty cool marathons in Europe while he lived overseas. He did the North Face 50K this summer. Said Dublin Marathon, always had the best beer, still loves the podcast. And yeah, Richard, I'm sorry it took me this long to get to your email, but you know how it goes. But if you feel like have some time, shoot me a short email on how the Ragnar Relay went. Of course, I appreciate the offer to be a member of your team, and I'm secretly glad that you found somebody, because my training at that point in time was not unready. I just wouldn't have been ready. I also got an email from Christina. She's got the Lazy Bones running blog that I've referred to over the years. And I got an email from her that the title line was, "Want to be a running shoe tester?" And the answer to that is yes. But unfortunately, I was the wrong size. It was only for people who are men's size or 10, 9 or 10, or women's size 7. And so that would have been pretty cool to have been able to do that. Appreciate that offer, Christina. I will I'll email you back and let you know that I got that email. I don't think I ever did. But yeah, that was that would have been pretty cool. It was for Skechers, and I think Skechers is making running shoes now. And I do have some new shoes now. I got some what did I get? Asics Gel Nimbus. Got them for like $75. I think normally they're much more expensive. But they feel kind of flat. I don't actually I don't really care for them. I'll just you know do them through the requisite mileage and then move on to something else. I'm thinking about switching brands. So this thing was kind of interesting, but I'm the wrong size. My foot's too big. Also got a postcard from Flinders down under from David Williams. Appreciate that. It says, "Hi Dave, after falling into a slump after finishing my 200-kilometer run, I am now happily back in the saddle. Training for a 64K on November 30th. Surprisingly, my back-to-back runs of 3 hours and 2 hours feel very tiring." And they should. It's amazing how quickly we lose our conditioning, isn't it? The race I have entered is the Bruny Island Ultra, which goes the length of the island, which is just off the mainland of Tasmania's capital, Hobart. When you have time, Google the race, and I will. I'll definitely check that out. Well, my wife Dale and I have finally bitten the bullet. We booked our flights over to the United States for next June. That'll be 2014. Going to Maui for a few days, R&R. But the main thing I have entered is the Bryce Canyon 50K on June 14th. I guess it'll be hot, and as the course is quite high in the mountains, I wonder how difficult it will be for someone living at sea level. Any thoughts that may help me? So I'll stop right there. No, I don't have any thoughts that'll help you. The only thing I have heard is that the only way to know how to run at altitude is to practice at it. But maybe if you get out there a couple days early, you can at least go out there and go on a few runs, so you'll see what it could be like. Are any of your listeners going to do that race? So if there's anybody out there in listener land that is going to be doing the Bryce Canyon 50K on June 14th of 2014, please email me at ashlanddave@gmail.com and I'll hook you up with David Williams, or email flinders.runner@hotmail.com. That's Flinders, F-L-I-N-D-E-R-S .runner@hotmail.com. And let David know how it is, if you've done it before, what it'd be like. Seriously, that would be great to have someone to talk to before he starts. He's also going to be wandering around Utah and Arizona for a couple weeks, taking in as many national parks as we can, including the short run in Death Valley, just to say I've done it. Quite exciting, really. Hope your running is going well. Best wishes down under Dave. Well, Dave, appreciate that email. And we had talked earlier about maybe trying to hook up while you're in the U.S., but you're just going to be on the opposite side of the country. But you're coming at a good time because the federal government has reopened these national parks after the debacle of closing them. And I'm not going to get into any political stuff here because I could probably go on for another 20 to 30 minutes on how embarrassing things are going in the country. And it's just crazy. But I hope you do take in some of those national parks because they are a gem. And as we learned with the recent government shutdown, it's pretty easy for the government to shut off people's access to them. I know the Grindstone 100, which was a race here in Virginia that recently that was going to be going through, I think it was George Washington National Forest. They had to cancel that and because the park was closed. And that's a shame because, you know, you had these people that might have been someone's first 100-miler, and then they got their hopes, you know, dashed because of the government shut these parks down. So hope you take as many of those in as you can. And, yeah, you might want to, if you're going to take a short run through Death Valley, I don't know what you qualify as short, you know, someone who's run a 200-kilometer race, but you might check out the following movies. One is Running on the Sun, which is a movie about bad water, and then there's another one. I've got that over in my cabin. I'm going to check that real quick. Stand by. Yeah, the other one's called The Distance of Truth. I have both of those in DVD form. I've watched them both, and they will both give you a very good idea of what it's like to run through Death Valley. I don't know what section you've chosen to run, but I recommend checking those out before you do that. And, yeah, just to say I've done it, hey, I don't blame you. I certainly would do that myself if I was out that way. So thanks for the email, Dave. I always appreciate hearing from you. Very nice to do that. I also heard from Steve Buani, who, I kind of missed his email when he was offering to run 18 miles with me. I guess I should check the emails more often. But I had to actually do that, my 18-miler on a Friday. And, yeah, Steve, appreciate that. And also, looks, I got your picture about the new shoes. I do appreciate that. And I appreciate you offering to run with me. I was actually able to do 20 this morning, believe it or not. I felt pretty, although my legs hurt right now. It's usually a good time to do the podcast is after I know that I can't walk around for a little bit and I can sit in front of the computer for a while and catch up on things. But I ran 20 with my good friend Ashlyn Tom this morning. We started at 6 a.m. Took about 3.5 hours, and you know, it's less than an 11-minute pace. I'm a little disappointed with my pacing, but I'm just hoping maybe on race day, the Richmond Marathon, which is November 16th, I'll you know, have some magic or something. But I had a very positive 20-miler, and you can't really you can't really complain about that. I did very well, felt good, finished strong, and there was only one time where I was starting to feel like, oh, this is too far, what am I getting myself into? But that quickly passed, and as usual, when Tom and I run, before we know it, the run is over, and we've moved on, you know, we're moving on with the rest of our day. I mean, this conversation with him was excellent, and initially, he was not going to be available. Nobody was going to be available to run with me, and I was going to have to do it solo, which I was kind of mentally prepping for over the course of the week when nobody was responding to my emails or people that did that were said they were going to be tied up doing something else. And so thankfully he came out and we got it done. And thank goodness, because now I'm going to be tapering for Richmond and I'll be starting with Tom's going to be pacing. And well, you know what? I'm going to talk about that in the next podcast. So that's it for this week, this time, this episode. This is Ashlyn Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashlyn, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish. Keep on running. Don't forget to hug your kids, and have a good week.